Hello, I'm Campbell Malone and here with Jenny Coleman.
Hello.
Most of you will know Jenny as the rather frightening inquisitor in the fiendish quiz. But I've come to talk to Jenny about her role as a humanist celebrant. Can we divide that up, Jenny? What's a humanist, first of all?
Humanism is a set of beliefs. It grew out of atheism, but it's more than atheism. Humanists are people who believe that we can lead a good life, the one life that we have, without needing to rely on religion or superstitious beliefs, and that we can understand the world by using reason, scientific investigation, and logic. We might not understand everything as yet, in fact, of course we don't, but we do believe that that's the way that things will be understood. We're positive people. We believe we have a responsibility to the world and to each other to try and make our one life as positive and as good as possible so that we leave the world and our fellow men a little better for us having been in it.
And what's a humanist celebrant?
All of us, we believe, need to celebrate the important times in our lives. Ritual is a very important way of marking and recording things that are important to us. The important things for most of us tend to be getting married, having children, and of course losing loved ones when people die. So humanist celebrants are trained, accredited, monitored, quality assured and insured by the British Humanist Association to help people who do not have religious beliefs. Not everybody we do ceremonies for are humanists, but they are people who wish to mark these special occasions in a way which is meaningful to them, and they don't wish to involve any religious content in it.
And you are now a humanist celebrant.
I am a humanist celebrant. I've been a humanist celebrant for the last five, nearly 6 years. It's something I had promised myself I would do as a treat for me when I retired. For quite some time, when I was coming towards the end of my ordinary working life and I knew that I would have a little bit more leisure, I promised myself that I would retrain as a humanist celebrant when I had the time to do it. And I think that's because I had been to, frankly, some truly dreadful religious ceremonies, particularly perhaps funerals, that appeared to me to have very little relevance to the person whose life we were remembering. And I'd also been to some truly inspiring humanist ceremonies, funerals and weddings, and I thought I could do that as well and that I would enjoy it.
So were you a teacher in your main career?
No, I was an occupational therapist. I worked in mental health. So there are some similarities towards teaching.
So having had one profession, rather than go on a world cruise, you decided that you were going to take up another vocation when you had the time to do so?
Yeah, yes.
And what sort of training is involved before you can start acting as a celebrant?
It's quite quite a complicated a training. We think it's the most thorough of any of them. For a start, you have to apply to to become a humanist celebrant. So first of all, people are quite carefully screened to make sure that they have reasonable and realistic expectations, and they have the makings of a professional and responsible celebrant. So you can't just pay your money and get on the course. You have to be interviewed and accepted onto the training. For the first ceremony you train for, and you train for each of the three types of ceremonies we do separately. So when you do the first one, there are two weekend training courses and a single day training course as well. So three residential times when you're doing it. Plus you have quite a lot of homework and scripts to submit. You are asked to do training examples in between.
So you would be put in an imaginary scenario and...
Indeed.
You would...
Indeed. Here is a situation. Write a ceremony for the family in this situation. Mm. You submit your ceremony. It is commented upon by your trainer and marked. And if you have done it to a suitable standard, then you are allowed through to the next stage of the training. And at every point, you have to fulfil the expectations of that bit of the training course before you can go through to the next one. You then are what's called provisionally accredited, which means you can begin to create ceremonies and deliver them for people. And you have to be observed and formally accredited. So one of the senior and experienced celebrants comes and watches you doing ceremonies to ensure that you're up to the standard. And then we are annually what's called peer reviewed. Somebody comes to each of our ceremonies once a year and fills in a form to make sure that we are maintaining the quality of what we do. And of course, we ask everybody we do ceremonies for to fill in a form at the end and send it off to headquarters.
So from submitting your application
mm-hmm.
to being a fully fledged celebrant, mm-hmm. approximately what sort of period?
It depends whether you've submitted your application just before a training course is about to start or not. But let's say from the time you first start doing your training to becoming fully accredited, it's usually something in between 3 to 6 months, depending on the time of year and what sort of ceremony you're doing. If you finish your training for weddings, for example, in February, it's likely to be a few months before you get your first wedding. People plan their weddings well in advance.
Do you train as a celebrant as a whole, or is it in stages?
No, it's in stages. The majority of people probably do their funeral training first. I didn't. I did my training for weddings first. Then I did my training for namings. And finally, I did my training for funerals. So you do all three separately, and you are only accredited for one, for the funerals that you've actually done the ceremonies that you've actually done the training for.
So you've touched on the three mm-hmm. types of occasions. Can we just look at those?
Mm-hmm.
Funerals, I think many of us have had experience of going to, where they're conducted by a humanist celebrant.
Mm.
There's no real difference apart from possibly in quality and personal contact between a service conducted by a humanist celebrant and a clergyman. There's the same legal status, is that right?
That's correct. I mean, a funeral, anybody can conduct a funeral, which in some ways is a problem. The legal bit is that you have to register a death,
mm.
which obviously you do at the registrar, that has to happen, and a body has to be appropriately disposed of. But there is actually no requirement even for a funeral. You don't have to have a funeral. So legally, the type of ceremony you have is entirely a matter for choice, if indeed you have a ceremony.
Yeah. Weddings are slightly different.
Mm-hmm.
In that there is a legal requirement, whether it's a wedding or a civil partnership, there is a legal process that has to be gone through. Is that something that a humanist celebrant is involved in?
At the moment, in England, humanist celebrants cannot legally marry people. So just as before you have a funeral or don't have a funeral, you have to legally register a death. Before you have a humanist wedding ceremony, you have to legally register your wish to be married or to have a civil partnership. In Scotland, things are very different. We have been able to legally marry people in Scotland for over 10 years now. The law is different in Scotland.
And once again, better. A speaker's a Scot.
I would not disagree with you. It's interesting because actually in Scotland, humanist weddings are far more, we do far more weddings in Scotland than either the Catholic Church or the Church of Scotland put together. Hmm. And generally, while the trend for getting married is decreasing, the trend for humanist weddings is increasing quite significantly.
And in relation to namings, mm-hmm. again, of course, there's a requirement that when children are born, their birth is registered at the registry office.
Yes.
In the church, there are baptisms or christenings. Mm-hmm. What's the humanist equivalent of that?
It's a naming ceremony, which is a celebration of the fact that a child has been born into this family. And that's quite important, actually, to say into this family. We certainly like to stress the fact that, of course, the parents are delighted, hopefully, that they have a new person in their lives. But so are the grandparents and the aunties and, you know, maybe even the older siblings. So it's very much a celebration of a new child coming into our world. You don't have to have a christening or a baptism. You don't have to have a naming, but it's a wonderful opportunity for people to come together to celebrate that this child has been born, and also for people to make some really quite serious promises to a child. Weddings and namings are a wonderful combination of everybody being really happy and people being really quite solemn and serious. You're making very important promises during a wedding ceremony. You're making very important commitments to a child. And I often say to people that, you know, it's not uncommon for us to have more tears during weddings or naming ceremonies than it is during funerals. They're very moving very often.
Thank you, Jenny. I'm going to stop there, and we will talk again on a later occasion about your work in perhaps slightly more detail.
Thank you.